I also want to introduce my colleague Kimberly Phillips, who's a research assistant, a project director at the Institute on Disability. A couple of days ago, Tony did a presentation and said he was giving the kind of the background or a research study he'd been working on, and that a more junior person who had joined the project a little later was going to be presenting the results. Kimberly will be doing that for this particular presentation. I, too, would like to thank the hardcore of you who are here for this last session. Now that I'm coming up on my, I think, near 20th APHA meeting, I'm realizing that all of us old hardcore people are getting old and not necessarily attending the final session, so I appreciate your attendance here today. It's a great array of presentations. Also, I would like to acknowledge and thank the funding for the study that's really funded a number, couple of the presentations here and a number of papers, the Disability and Rehabilitation Research Project, Health and Healthcare Disparities Among Individuals with Disabilities Project, funded by the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research before the name change at ED and at American Community Administration on Community Living. So I get to talk with you about the fun stuff. I get to talk to you, review the results of the systematic scoping review that the project conducted. It focused on clinical preventive services and disability. Part of the presentation will focus on identifying disparities in CPS use among people with disabilities and different disability subgroups using a nationally representative data set. So extending the scoping review, which has a mix of studies, designs within it, to using a national representative data set. And then we get to describe the factors that predict receipt of clinical preventive services among people with disabilities and different subgroups. I noticed that the Declaration of No Financial Conflict slide didn't come up, so I worked on this extensively. I wanted you to know that I have no financial, moral, or ethical conflicts in conducting this presentation. I think we need a little chuckle or two at the last day of APHA. So, what are clinical preventive services? Well, this generally includes routinely offered screenings, diagnostic tests, physician counseling, and immunizations. And these are good things in public health and in health because they reduce morbidity and mortality, early deaths and diseases. When not everybody receives clinical preventive services at the same rate, these can create health disparities. They can go beyond mere difference to statistically significant differences in which public health then needs to act where a disparity exists. The Health Disparities Project, which has been around for a number of years now, funded a systematic scoping review. And then we collaborated with the Research and Training Center on Community Living, the one that Glenn White is the PI of, to extend that review. And that review is really to identify and assess health disparity and disability literature as it pertains to clinical preventive services. I'm sure many of you are familiar with systematic reviews. They're a great research tool. They are rigorous, systematic methods for locating and reviewing previously published research. I like them because the process is so rigorous that it creates its own set of research data. Our particular scoping review focused on literature published between 2000 and 2009 with our original round of funding, and then we extended that time period to 2010 to 2011 through funding from Glenn White and the Research and Training Center on Community Living. The results of this study is available. It's now out in the Disability and Health Journal. Jana Peterson-Bessie, who perhaps some of you know, is the lead author of that. And it looks at and gives a much more extensive explication of the results that I'll be summarizing today. So, a systematic scoping review so rigorous that you have to identify all the possible literature out there and hopefully you narrow it down once you apply your inclusion and exclusion criteria. So the final N of published studies published in the United States looking at the topic of interest was 27. But you should know that we started out initially by identifying over 4,100 abstracts. We excluded a little over 4,000 of those with our inclusion and exclusion criteria. That gave us full texts of 107 articles to read. Again, applying the exclusion criteria, got rid of 80 more, giving us our final N of 27. So 27 is too easy to start with. I wanted you to understand the many hundreds of hours that were deployed to come up with a final set of articles. All of these looking at clinical preventive services among people with disabilities. The CPS that was most examined in that literature, so we're talking, 10, 11 years worth of literature, cervical cancer screening, number one. There were 14 articles that covered that topic and 13 studies that examined mammography. So women's health is something that has been really focused on, certainly in the last decade. Least examined, prostate cancer screening, weight checks, and diabetes screenings, again, among people with disabilities. And there may be a wide range of factors that contribute to disparities or differences in receipt of CPS. The factors that were most examined were disabling condition or type of disability. That was examined in 12 of the 27 studies. And severity of disability in 10 of the overall studies. So the short version of the article, which I encourage you to read in its full, is that there are many gaps that still exist in research on CPS, disability, and the different determinants that drive the kind of differences in receipt between people with and without disabilities. One of the interesting things about our field is that there's a variety of research methods and disability definitions that are used in our research, and certainly in the 27 manuscripts looking at clinical preventive services, disability was defined variously from a categorical perspective, like a spinal cord injury. Many of the articles took a functional approach and described it as a mobility limitation, physical limitation. Even within those studies, however, people would differ on how they defined mobility. And there's a wide range of research methodologies present in our field. So a lot of convenience samples, focus group research, but then increasingly secondary data analysis as well. So those are some of the more strong designs that are available. Interestingly, but perhaps not surprising, given the range of designs, the directionality of the evidence around the existence of the disparity was not consistent. And I didn't bring it up with me. I actually have I have a copy of the paper, and one of the disparity factors that they looked at was the type of disability, and it was covered in something like 8 of the 14 studies on mammography. Even within looking at that set of papers, some of the papers said that, oh yeah, there's evidence out there of disparity. Several of the papers said, nope, we looked at it. There is no tie between disability type and disparity, and some of the papers had no results or mixed results or neutral results, couldn't determine one way or the other. In fact, in a number of the substantive areas, the directionality of the evidence went in multiple directions. So given that concern and the larger goal of the Health Disparities Project, we said, well, we should build on the findings of the systematic scoping review. We wanted to develop a set of research questions to test the results of the scoping review using a population-based data set. Particularly, what we're using is a pooled data set from the 2004 to 2010 Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. Amanda will talk about that more in relation to some of her findings. But a nice, robust, nationally representative population-based data set. The first research question for this particular study is there a disparity in rates of clinical preventive service utilization among people with and without disabilities? I wanted to drill down. Our second question, is there a disparity in rates of CPS utilization among different groups, disability groups, compared to the non-disabled population? And what are two individual and systems level factors predict receipt of CPS among disability subgroups? For the purposes of this presentation, we've eliminated the counseling-focused CPS to focus on areas with the greatest disparity. So we found disparities around dental, mammography, and receipt of pap smears, and flu vaccines. We use a modified version of the Anderson model as the basis for descriptively grouping the predictive factors. And if you'll remember that model, basically you've got a set of environmental factors, a set of population characteristics, which will then in turn or should or may predict to health behavior in this context, the receipt of the clinical preventive services. Our dependent variable was the receipt. The independent variables included systems, levels, factors like usual source of care, insurance, region, individual level factors such as age, gender, where appropriate, race, ethnicity, marital status, income, and education. We did focus on working age adults, 18 to 64, because of the impact on the Medicare insurance system. And obviously, for mammography, we limited it to women, 50 to 64, and for receipt of PAP treatment, or women 21 to 64. Our disability subgroups include hearing limitation, vision limitation, cognitive limitation, physical limitation, or multiple limitations, and then we grouped all of those to make any disability. It's an interesting sample. About 13% of the people in the sample had any disability, about 87% no disability. Among the different subgroups, people experienced physical limitations. That was 9.7% of the sample, cognitive 0.4, visual 0.6, hearing 0.3, and multiple 1.8. So,
thank you. So starting with the receipt of preventive dental health care, in the MEPS, the question is whether you on average receive a dental visit at least once a year. We've included in our findings slides, in the point estimate slides, the Healthy People 2020 target, just because that provides an interesting contrast to what we are finding. So here you see that the target is 49%. People without disabilities said that they do receive a preventive dental checkup at least once a year, 64% of the time, compared to any disability is only 50% of the time, and there will be an asterisk denoting statistical significance. Then when we look at the disability subgroups, okay, people with a physical limitation saw a dentist at least once a year 53% of the time. Cognitive limitation is 45% of the time. Visual limitation is 48% of the time. Hearing limitation, 49% of the time. And the least receipt of preventive dental services is among the multiple limitations group at just 39%. For mammography, the Healthy People 2020 target is 81%. People with no disability, 80% of the time, this is women 50 to 64, had a mammogram within the last 2 years, 80%. Okay, compared to people with a disability at only 75% of the time. Here we have eliminated two of the subgroups from the discussion because of small sample sizes. So there is no statistical significance between people with a physical limitation and people with no disabilities. 77% of women had a mammogram in the last 2 years if they had a physical limitation, compared to 62% among those with a visual limitation and 69% among women with multiple limitations. And for PAP, the Healthy People 2020 target is for 93% of the target population to receive a PAP test once within 3 years if they are a woman between 21 and 64 years of age. So 88% of women with no disability reported having a PAP test within the recommended time, compared to 78% of people with a disability. And here, again, we eliminated the hearing limitation group because of a small sample size. But you can see that there's more variation among the disability subtypes. So physical limitation is 80% of women. 70% of women with a cognitive limitation had a PAP test within the last 3 years. 78% of women with a visual limitation. And 72% of women with multiple limitations. I know that we're short on time. I'm only going to talk about a couple of highlights from the findings. So this is the odds ratio for the odds ratios for all of the predictors, systems level and individual level. And I put it up there not because I expect you to be able to read it, but if you look at the pattern of the highlighted cells, what I want to illustrate is that the group of people with physical limitations, the constellation of predictors is nearly identical to people without any limitations, but that is not the case for the other groups. So two findings that really stand out from all of these odds ratios. First of all, insurance is the driving factor, determining whether people have had a preventive dental checkup with, annually. And here we have broken it down by having any private insurance, having public insurance only, and having no insurance. And the other is, the other interesting finding with dental is when you look at race and ethnicity. So for people without disabilities, being Hispanic or checking other as your race or ethnicity predicts less receipt of preventive dental care. These numbers, the odds ratios flip when you look at some of the disability subgroups. So people with physical limitations, cognitive limitations, and multiple limitations, race becomes more predictive of having preventive dental care in the last year. So we thought this was interesting and worth highlighting. Predictors of mammography, again, are insurance. They're both systems level. And having a usual source of care. We've broken it down by hospital-based and office-based usual source of care. But because we excluded emergency department, really, I think it's possible to generalize and say having any usual source of care other than emergency department is predictive of receipt of mammography. And finally, for PAP, again, we see systems-level variables really driving the differences and seeing that having a usual source of care is the most predictive factor in women's receipt of PAP test, regardless of the disability type. So some summaries and implications. There are several, but in the interest of time, we said that receipt of clinical preventive services, there are disparities present among all the disability subtypes, but not all subgroups experience those disparities equally. The predictors of clinical preventive service receipt also vary in type of explanatory power by disability subgroup, and policies and programs that address these types of health disparities may need to account for differences in subgroup in order to be most efficient. And this may mean that we need to rethink the infusion approach to policies and programs and take another look at how predictors work with different types of disability. Thank you.